Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now covering Leviticus chapter 9, whole chapter, verses 1 through 24. I'm going to call this chapter The Priests Begin Their Ministry. Our context is this. I'm going to give you some broad context. The book of Exodus was about establishing the tabernacle and getting it built. Well, once you got a tabernacle, you got to have offerings to offer in the courtyard of the tabernacle. So that's where what the first several chapters of the book of Leviticus are about, the five basic sacrifices: the sin offering, the peace offering, the burnt offering, the guilt offering, and the grain offering. Well, now that you've got sacrifices, you've got to have priests ready to give those sacrifices. So God consecrated them in chapter 8 of Leviticus. And now we move to chapter 9, which talks about the first sacrifices offered by the newly ordained priest as the priest enter into their service for the people. So now we start in Leviticus 9, verses 1 through 3. Now it came about on the eighth day that Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel, and he said to Aaron, "Take for yourself a calf, a bull, for a sin offering, and a ram for a burnt offering, both without defect, and offer them before the Lord. Then to the sons of Israel you shall speak, saying, Take a male goat for a sin offering, and a calf and a lamb, both 1 year old, without defect, for a burnt offering." Now, verse 1 says it came about on the eighth day. Eighth day of what? Well, that's referring to the 7 days that it took to ordain the priest in chapter 8. These 7 days of probation, if you want to call them that, are now over. 7 days of consecration are over. Leviticus 8:33 says this: "You shall not go outside the doorway of the tent of meeting for 7 days, until the day that the period of your ordination is fulfilled. For he will ordain you through 7 days." So Aaron has been ordained, and we're now at the eighth day, and Aaron is the official high priest. And Moses calls him in verse 1. Now, this idea of perfection being obtained on the eighth day, which is after 7 days have passed, and of course, 7 days is the standard symbol of divine perfection. We see that children were circumcised on the eighth day. Leviticus 12, verses 2 through 3, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, When a woman gives birth and bears a male child, then she'll be unclean. She shall be unclean for 7 days, as in the days of her menstruation she'll be unclean. On the eighth day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised." So the mother is unclean for 7 days because of that flow of menstrual blood. Blood is holy. Life is in the blood. We want to separate its bodily functions from the divine function of atoning for sin. So the woman is unclean for 7 days. And then on the eighth day, the boy is circumcised. A beast is not ready for sacrifice until it is 8 days old. Leviticus 22:27. "When an ox or a sheep or a goat is born, it shall remain 7 days with its mother. And from the eighth day on, it shall be accepted as a sacrifice." People were cleansed from leprosies and other physical ailments on the eighth day. We see in Leviticus 14:8-10, "The one to be cleansed shall then wash his clothes, shave his hair, bathe in water. Afterward he may enter the camp, but he shall stay outside his tent for 7 days. It will be on the seventh day that he shall shave off all his hair. He shall then wash his clothes, bathe his body in water, and be clean." Verse 10, "Now on the eighth day he is to take his animals and flour and oil and so forth, and make his sacrifices on the eighth day." That's a man being cleansed from leprosy, a man being cleansed from a seminal discharge. Leviticus 15:13-14. "Now when the man with a discharge becomes cleansed from his discharge, then he shall count for himself 7 days for his cleansing. He shall then wash his clothes, bathe his body. He will be clean. Then on the eighth day he shall take for himself his sacrifices." One more example, Numbers 6:9-10, we see that when a Nazarite was defiled by a dead man, it took him 7 days to get clean. On the eighth day, he was clean. But if a man dies very suddenly, we read this in Numbers 6, verses 9 through 10, "But if a man dies very suddenly beside him, and he defiles his dedicated head of hair, then he shall shave his head on the day when he becomes clean. He shall shave it on the seventh day. Then on the eighth day, he shall bring 2 turtle doves or 2 young pigeons to the priest to the doorway of the tent of meeting." The eighth day, he's clean. So the eighth day, that's a sort of a structural thing in the law. 7 days of uncleanliness, and then on the eighth day, you're ready to go. Now, these first three verses talk about two sets of sacrifices. The first set is for the priest himself, and the second sacrifice is for the elders of Israel. Or there's some question about that. Verse 3 says the sons of Israel. Verse 1 says, the elders of Israel. I'm going to take it as the elders of Israel. So you got a sacrifice for the priest, Aaron, and you got a set of sacrifices for the priest, Aaron, and a set of sacrifices for all of the people, represented by the elders. Now, the oft-repeated phrase, Aaron and his sons, is here. His sons are Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar. Nadab and Abihu are not going to get bumped off until the next chapter, chapter 10, so they're still there. They have been consecrated just as ordinary priests. Aaron has been consecrated as the high priest. And, of course, that high priesthood is hereditary. It goes down in the family, according to age, I presume. But all four of his sons are there. And so they're going to help Aaron as ordinary priests, the sons are. They're going to help Aaron as the high priest offer these sacrifices. Now, in verse 2, Moses says to Aaron, take for yourself. In other words, for your sins, if you're going to be a high priest, you have to be sinless. Of course, not actually, but Levitically, sinless, pure, holy. So take for yourself certain animals one animal for a sin offering and one animal for a burnt offering. Both, of course, without defect, and offer them. Well, the typical animal for a sin offering for a high priest, as we learned in chapter 1, is a bull. And here it's a young bull. And I have yet to figure out what the difference between an old bull and a young bull is here. But at any rate, here it's a young bull for a sin offering. That's typical of the sin offering for the high priest. Nothing unusual there. And then a ram for a burnt offering. Now, a burnt offering could be any kind of animal, basically. A bull or a ram or a goat. In this case, the burnt offering is a ram. That's a male sheep. Now, before we get to the burnt offering, let's finish up with the sin offering here and make this point. The idea that a high priest needed a sin offering to take care of his sins is very different than pagan religions. Pagan religions elevated their priest into a status of purity and favor with the gods. But the Hebrew religion says, no, your high priest is a sinner and needs to have his sin atoned for. That's Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown's comment. Adam Clark makes the point that it's reasonable to speculate that Aaron's particular sin that was being atoned for was the sin of the golden calf, because now we've got the high priest who famously or infamously led the children of Israel into mass idolatry. Yeah, he needed to have his sin atoned for, because that was a heap big sin. It really is amazing that Aaron could do such a great sin and be rewarded with the office of high priesthood after that. It's another example of grace in the Old Testament, which people say is not there. It's everywhere in the Old Testament. Now notice in verse 3, Moses is talking to Aaron, and he says, you, then to the sons of Israel, you shall speak. In other words, I'm turning it over to you. I've been acting as high priest when I got you consecrated in the last chapter of Leviticus, chapter 8, but now here in chapter 9, you are the high priest, so you shall speak. So you instruct the people. And this is what Moses tells Aaron to say to the people. Take a male goat for a sin offering and a calf and a lamb, both 1 year old without defect, for a burnt offering. So now we have the sin offering and the burnt offering for the people. Now there's a problem here, because the typical sin offering for the people was a bull, just like for the high priest. It was a bull, not a goat. We read that in Leviticus 4, verse 14. When the sin which they have committed becomes known, then the assembly shall offer a bull of the herd for a sin offering and bring it before the tent of meeting. So it's a bull for the people at large, but here in verse 3 we have a male goat. Now male goats were offered for leaders' sins. Leviticus 4, verse 22 through 23. When a leader sins and unintentionally does any one of all the things which the Lord his God has commanded not to be done, and he becomes guilty, if his sin which he has committed is made known to him, he shall bring for his offering a goat, a male without defect. But here it sounds like the sacrifice is being done for the sins of all the people. Verse 3, it says, then to the sons of Israel you shall speak. Well, this is the way I reconcile that. The sons of Israel is not referring to all the people. It's referring to the elders. Verse 1, it says, Moses called Aaron and his sons and the elders of Israel. Verse 3, then to the sons of Israel can refer to the elders of Israel, who are the leaders, and the leaders need a male goat for a sin offering. That's the easiest way to solve that little problem. Another option is to say, well, this is a special sin offering because it's the very first one. Adam Clark mentions this. He says, the bull that was offered for the sins of the people in chapter 4 of Leviticus, when the whole assembly sins, was for a particular sin. But this sin offering here is just for sins in general without mention of a particular sin, and so therefore a different animal was used. I don't think that's the best way to go. It should be the sons of Israel are the elders of Israel, and so they need a male goat for their sin offering. And the people have a calf, a young bovine animal, a young bull, a bullock, and they have a young sheep, a male sheep, a young ram, a lamb. Both 1 year old without defect. I don't know why young youth is emphasized here. I've yet to figure out what the difference is between a mature animal and a young one, but that's the way it is. All right, so we go to verse 4, Leviticus 9. And an ox and a ram for peace offerings. Moses continues to tell Aaron what kind of animals he's to tell the people to bring. They're to bring an ox and a ram for peace offerings to sacrifice before the Lord, and a grain offering mixed with oil. For today the Lord will appear to you. Now that appearance is probably the Shekinah glory. This, when God shows up, we'll see that at the end of the chapter. The first thing we note here is the two animals that are going to be given for the peace offerings for the people. Any animal might be used for a peace offering. Leviticus 3:1 tells us that. So an ox, if you consider that of the herd, and the ram of the flock, that's nothing unusual about that. But what is strange here is the translation of ox, because if you will look on the dictionary, there is a big difference between an ox and a bull. They're both of them adults. Excuse me, they're both of them male cattle. A bull is adult male cattle, and ox can either be old or young. The big difference is the bull has his testicles. He's fertile and aggressive because of that, but an ox is castrated and docile because of that. Now, an ox is often larger than a bull. A bull is often smaller than an oxen. An ox was used as a draft animal. A bull, normally used for stud, to use to mate with females. So, the question is why do most all translations use the word ox there instead of bull? I don't know. It could have something to do with the word's usage in English might not be set. I got the differences between an ox and a bull from a website called difference.guru. So maybe they're technical farmers, whereas the usage might not be quite that fixed. I don't know. I do notice that the Young's literal translation uses the word bullock there instead of ox, even though all the other translations that I looked at use the word ox. Well, it's a literal translation, so we're going to say bullock, a young bull. Son of the herd. And again, young bull or bullock depends on if you translate son of the herd as a young bull. You could just say it belongs to the herd because it's the son of the herd. It could be an old bull. Well, I don't know the answer to that. So we're going to say that this is a bull or an ox, a bullock, and a ram for peace offerings. So once we get past that problem, it's a typical peace offering. Of course, peace offering shows fellowship between the offerer and God, and also the priest who helps minister the offering to God, fellowship meal, and also the offerer's family is invited, and the poor. They eat a nice meal in the courtyard. And then, of course, you have a grain offering also. We go now to verses 5 through 6, Leviticus 9. So they, that's Aaron and his sons, took what Moses had commanded to the front of the tent of meeting, and the whole congregation came near and stood before the Lord. Moses said, "This is the thing which the Lord has commanded you to do, that the glory of the Lord may appear to you." Sounds like they're trying to get God's presence, need to get God to show up. I don't think you can say that they're manipulating God, because God told them to do all this, and then the idea is if you'll do it, he's going to appear to give his sanction, to give his approval on what they had done. So this is not an example of name it and claim it, blab it and grab it, mark it and park it, confess it and possess it, scream it and redeem it, call it and haul it. Oh no. So they, Aaron and his sons, took what Moses had commanded. Well, what was it that Moses had commanded to go to the front of the tent of meeting? Well, that's all the sacrifices that were mentioned in the first several verses, and I'm going to break them out again. The sacrifices for Aaron the high priest, first of all, for a sin offering for Aaron the high priest, we have a young bull. Verse 7 also tells us, which we haven't gotten to yet, that that young bull was for all the sins of the people as well as for the high priest. And Aaron also gets a ram for a burnt offering for Aaron. That's in verse 2. So we got a young bull and ram for the burnt offering. And I assume they were segregated out as they were brought forth to the front of the altar. Now, how about for the whole congregation in the person of the elders, the sons of Israel as elders? That's a male goat. We mentioned that. The Young's literal translation mentions that it's a male goat kid, a young male goat. And a burnt offering for all the people. One is a calf, a young bull, and a lamb, which is a young ram. The Young's Literal Translation says that the calf and the lamb are sons of a year. Sons of a year. Son just means it has an attribute of a year. And then other animals for both Aaron and the congregation together. You have a bullock in verse 4 for a peace offering. You have a ram for a peace offering in verse 4. And you have the grain offering in verse 4. I say it's for both Aaron and the congregation because the priest always shares the fellowship meal with the congregation. So let me go through that again. Let me just run them through. Aaron, young bull and a ram, whole congregation in the person of the elders. For those sins, you have a male goat and you have a calf and a lamb. And then for the peace offerings, you got a bullock, a ram, and the grain offering. Now, what is this glory of the Lord that's supposed to appear? John Gill gives some options, and I'm going to give you what I think is the obvious answer, but he says Christ might appear to them. Well, an epiphany. Or it could be the Father in human form, like God sitting on the throne in the first part of Isaiah, Elijah, Revelation. Or it could be the Shekinah glory in the Holy of Holies, which I believe it is, because that Shekinah glory shows up over and over again. The cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night, that's the Shekinah glory. Or the glory of the Lord might be referring to the fire that consumed the sacrifice, which you're going to read about in verses 23 and 24 of this chapter. I'm going to assume it's the Shekinah glory. That way we get the Shekinah glory appearing, coming out of the Holy of Holies, through the front door of the tabernacle, in addition to the fire that came down from heaven to light up the sacrifices. So we get both in my interpretation. I think that's reasonable. We go now to verses 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11 of Leviticus 9. Moses then said to Aaron, "Come near to the altar and offer your sin offering and your burnt offering, that you may make atonement for yourself and for the people. Then make the offering for the people that you may make atonement for them, just as the Lord has commanded." So let's keep the structure here. There's two sets of offerings. One is for Aaron, sin and burnt. One is for the people, sin and burnt. So Aaron came near to the altar and slaughtered the calf of the sin offering, which was for himself. Aaron's sons presented the blood to him, and he dipped his finger in the blood and put some on the horns of the altar and poured out the rest of the blood at the base of the altar. The fat in the kidneys and the lobe of the liver of the sin offering he then offered up in smoke on the altar, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. The flesh and the skin, however, he burned with fire outside the camp. Well, just to refresh our memory, Moses tells Aaron, "Come near to the altar and offer your sin offering." What's that? Well, that's a bull for the high priest. And it was also for the people, we know in verse 7, because it says right here, "Offer your sin offering and your burnt offering, that you may make atonement for yourself and for the people." So the bull is for Aaron and the people. And in verse 7, a burnt offering is to be brought in front of the altar. And that, in verse 2, tells us that's a ram. So we got a bull and a ram coming to the front. Now, it says that the sin offering and your burnt offering, that you may make atonement for yourself. It sounds like maybe the burnt offering participates in the atonement that the sin offering does. I don't think so. I think he's just talking about the sin offering. However, I will say this. There is another verse, which I don't have in front of me right now, but I remember reading it, which says that a burnt offering, that would be in chapter 1, a burnt offering was for the atonement of the people too, which is kind of interesting, really. Sin offering is usually what you think of as being for atonement. Now, the fact that there had to be atonement for yourself, Moses says to Aaron, you need atonement. You need something to make atonement for yourself. That shows the imperfection of the Levitical law, as Adam Clark says, because the high priest is obliged to make offerings for his own sin. We read that in Hebrews chapter 5, verse 3, "And because of it, he is obligated to offer sacrifices for sins, as for the people, so also for himself." He has to make a sacrifice for himself. Hebrews 7:27. This is all to show that Jesus is a better high priest than Aaron and his sons. Hebrews 7:27, "Who does not need daily like those high priests, our heavenly high priest, like those high priests, he does not need daily to offer up sacrifices, first for his own sins," Jesus didn't have any sins, "and then for the sins of the people, because this he did once for all when he offered up himself." So you see this idea of offering up sacrifice for his sins and the sins of the people, that fits right here in chapter 9, where at the inaugural offering of the sacrifices, they started out with taking care of the priest, and then they took care of the sins of the people. Hebrews 9:7, "But into the second, only the high priest," the second holy place, second compartment of the tabernacle, "only the high priest enters once a year, not without taking blood, which he offers for himself and for the sins of the people committed in ignorance." So whenever you see atonement being done for the people, you see atonement being done for the high priest who's offering the atonement for the people. This is a standard structure that's in Leviticus. It's mentioned in Hebrews to contrast the Old Testament system with the New Testament system, in which our high priest does not have to offer up blood for himself. He only atones for the sins of the people because he doesn't have any sins to be atoned for. Now, verse 7 continues. Moses tells Aaron, after you finish with your sacrifices, then make offering for the people. Well, just to refresh our memory, the people needed a sin offering of a male goat because that was for the sons of Israel, who were probably the elders of Israel. Typical sin offering is a male goat for the leaders. Young's literal translation said it was a kid, a young male goat. And the people also had a burnt offering of praise to God, a whole burnt offering of a calf and a lamb, called sons of a year by the Young's literal translation, which means they were a young calf and a young lamb, a young bull, if you will, a bullock, and a lamb is a young ram, a young male sheep. Burnt offering could be any kind of animal. So could the peace offering, really. It was the sin offering that the type of animal was very specifically specified. Verse 8, Aaron does this. He slaughters the calf of the sin offering. Where did he do it? Oh, I'm sure it was on the north side of the altar. Leviticus 1:11. He shall say it, not the sin offering, but the burnt offering. And I know we're talking about sin offerings right now, but the burnt offering was burnt on the side of the altar north of before the Lord. And I assume all other sacrifices were slain there also. Now, verse 9 says, Aaron's sons presented the blood to him. So what happened? Aaron himself killed the animal, killed the bull on the north side of the altar. He drained the blood, or had his sons take the blood as it was coming from the animal, into a bowl. The sons of Aaron took the blood in the bowl and gave the blood to the bowl to Aaron. And Aaron dipped his finger in that blood and put some on the horns of the altar. That's the bronze altar. Poured out the rest of the blood at the base of the altar. Now, this sprinkling of the blood on the horns and then pouring out the rest at the base, the horns, of course, were the four corners of the altar, which meant the whole altar is covered by blood. All the blood is offered to God as it's poured out in front of the altar. This was the same way that Moses handled the sin offering that was involved in the ordination sin offering in the previous chapter, Leviticus 8:15. Next, Moses slaughtered the bull, and took the blood, and with his finger put some of it around the horns of the altar and purified the altar. Then he poured out the rest of the blood at the base of the altar and consecrated it to make atonement for it. Now, this sin offering for the priest is a little bit different than the normal sin offering. The normal sin offering, we read in Leviticus 4 that the blood is put on the horns of the golden altar inside the tabernacle, and also seven times before the veil, the inner veil, separating the holy place from the Holy of Holies, but not here. And I don't know why that is. It could be that Leviticus, Moses just left out the rest of what the priest did here for the sin offering, figuring they would do what a normal sin offering would do. I don't know, but it's not mentioned. Verse 10, the fat in the kidneys and the lobe of the liver of the sin offering, that's the typical four kinds of fat. Kidney fat, liver fat, enteral fat, fat connected to the enterals, fat connected to the kidneys, including the kidneys. They are always offered up to God with sin offerings. That's God's portion. It was death to eat the fat because that belonged to God. Aaron offered that up in smoke on the altar as his own sin offering to God, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. When had God commanded Moses to do that? In Leviticus 4:8, he shall remove from the sin offering, all the fat of the bull of the sin offering, the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat which is on the entrails, ... and the rest of the fat regulations are given. And again, it's emphasized Moses did everything meticulously, just like God had commanded. He did not deviate in one little iota. Verse 11, the flesh and the skin, however, this is of the sin offering for the priest, the bull, he burned with fire outside the camp, just as he should have done. Now, in a sin offering for an ordinary person, the part that was not the fat, that was not offered up to God, the flesh was eaten by the high priest in the courtyard, and then the refuse, the skin and such, the dung, was taken outside and burnt. But here, there's no eating of any flesh inside the courtyard. It was all taken outside. Exodus 29:14 established that. the context here is the consecration of the priest. Quote, but the flesh of the bull and its hide and its refuse you shall burn with fire outside the camp. It is a sin offering. All right, so there's no eating of anything by the priest because they were offering this as their sin offering. We go to verses 12 through 14 of Leviticus 9. Leviticus 9, verses 12 through 14 says this, then he, that's Aaron, slaughtered the burnt offering, and Aaron's sons handed the blood to him, to Aaron, and he, or Aaron, sprinkled it around on the altar. They, the sons of Aaron, handed the burnt offering to him, to Aaron, in pieces with the head, and he offered them up in smoke on the altar. He also washed the entrails and the legs, and offered them up in smoke with the burnt offering on the altar. Again, they were slaughtering the animals. Aaron slaughtered the burnt offering on the north side of the altar because the Leviticus 1:11 specifically says that's where he's supposed to do it. The burnt offering that is being slaughtered here in this verse for Aaron or by Aaron was the ram. The ram for the burnt offering, as we saw in verse 2. Now, Aaron sprinkled the blood around on the altar of burnt offering, on the bronze altar. Aaron had seen Moses do that at Aaron's ordination in the previous chapter, Leviticus 8, verse 19. Moses slaughtered the animal, and sprinkled the blood around on the altar. So Moses had done it before when he was acting as priest. Now Aaron's going to do it because he is now officially the high priest. Now, sprinkling the blood around on the altar, that was standard for all sin offerings, for all burnt offerings. Also, the cutting into pieces and the washing of the entrails and the legs, that was standard also. We see the cutting into pieces in Leviticus 1:6, a normal burnt offering, an ordinary burnt offering. Then he must skin the burnt offering and cut it into pieces. That was probably to make it easier to burn on the altar because the whole animal had to burn up and go up in smoke to God. And also the burnt offering and Aaron's consecration in the last chapter, Leviticus 8:20, when he had cut the ram into its pieces, Moses offered up the head and the pieces and the suet and smoke. So pieces of a burnt offering split out on the altar, that's normal. And the washing of the entrails and the leg, that's the same as any ordinary burnt offering in Leviticus 1:9, first part of the verse. Its entrails, however, and its legs he shall wash with water. So nothing unusual there. We go now to Leviticus 9, verses 15 through 17. Then he, that's Aaron, presented the people's offering. Now we've gone from Aaron's offerings for himself, now he's atoned for his sin and offered up his praise to God with a burnt offering, atoned for his sin with the sin offering, and offered up his whole self to God with the whole burnt offering in total consecration and praise. Now he's going to turn to the people's offering, and he's going to deal with the leaders of Israel. Then he presented the people's offering and took the goat of the sin offering, which was for the people, mainly it's for the leaders of the people, and slaughtered it and offered it for sin like the first. He also presented the burnt offering. This is the burnt offering for the people, not for himself, but for the people, and offered it according to the ordinance. Next, he presented the grain offering and filled his hand with some of it and offered it up in smoke on the altar, besides the burnt offering of the morning. Now, the sin offering, which was for the people in verse 15, refers to the male goat, which was prescribed for the sin of the sons of Israel, probably the elders of Israel. As a Young's literal translation said, it was a kid. So we have a young male goat offered up here in verse 15. As I said, usually it was a bull for the sins of the people, but I'm going to assume this is a male goat for the sins of the leaders because they've got to be cleansed before they can do their leading. Now, the burnt offering was offered up. In verse 3, we saw that the burnt offering for the people, not for the priest, not for Aaron, but for the people, was a calf and a lamb. It's two animals for the burnt offering. 1 year old, a calf, a young bovine animal, a young bull, and a young lamb, a young male sheep, a young ram. Young bull and a young ram offered up as burnt offerings. Aaron offered up those two burnt offerings, those two animals, according to the ordinance. Which ordinance? Well, all of chapter 1 is about how to deal with burnt offerings, which we've already covered. Verse 17, next he presented the grain offering and filled his hand with some of it. Well, the grain offerings are described in chapter 2 of Leviticus. Typically, you got flour and oil mixed together. A handful is placed on the altar. That memorial portion, as it is called, is burnt and goes up into smoke to God. The rest of the grain is taken off, taken back into the courtyard, and cooked three different ways, even in an oven, on a griddle, or in a pan. So three different forms of unleavened bread. It was always unleavened. And they put oil either in the flour or on the cooked flour on the wafer, and then the priest would eat it or store it and take it home, perhaps. So that's standard. Now, this grain offering was offered beside the burnt offering of the morning. What does that mean? Remember, there was a famous morning and afternoon sacrifice. Some people say about 9 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know, but it was morning and evening, and those were burnt offerings. That is described in Exodus 29, verses 38 through 42. The evening and morning burnt offerings were one-year-old lambs, one in the morning, one in the evening, along with the lambs that was offered omer, or one-tenth of an ephah of fine flour. That was about 2 quarts mixed with beaten oil, one-fourth of a hin oil mixed with flour, and then also wine was poured out along with the burnt offering, a fourth of a hin. So this is standard. One lamb you offer at twilight with the same grain offering, and the drink offering is in the morning as at night. And it's said to be continual in verse 42. Always. It doesn't stop. Every morning, morning and evening. This was the first sacrifice of the day. The one in the morning was. No sacrifice was offered up before that. Well, anyway, the burnt offering is still going to be burning on the altar. And so the grain offering, the memorial portion of the grain offering, the handful of flour with oil mixed of it, is thrown on the altar right at the same time the burnt offering is. And it is burnt up, as it says in verse 17, beside the burnt offering of the morning, the grain offering is offered. We go down to Leviticus 9, verses 18 through 21. Then he slaughtered the ox. The Young's literal translation has a bullock. Then he slaughtered the ox and the ram, the sacrifice of peace offerings, which was for the people. And Aaron's sons handed the blood to him, and he sprinkled it around on the altar. As for the portions of fat from the ox and from the ram, the fat tail and the fat covering, and on the kidneys and on the lobe of the liver, they now placed the portions of fat on the breast, and he offered them up in smoke on the altar. But the breast and the right thigh Aaron presented as a wave offering before the Lord, just as Moses had commanded. Well, the allowable animals for a peace offering were any animal from the herd, that's cow, a bull, or the flock, that is a sheep or a goat, and it's male or female, either one, doesn't matter. We read this in Leviticus 3:1. Now, if his offering is a sacrifice of peace offerings, if he is going to offer out of the herd, whether male or female, so it doesn't matter, but it's a cow. The herd means cow, whether or bull, whether male or female, he shall offer it. Leviticus 3:6. But if his offering for a sacrifice of peace offerings to the Lord is from the flock, that's a sheep or a goat, he shall offer it, male or female. So, doesn't matter. So the blood was sprinkled around on the altar by Aaron, just like he did with the burnt offering of his own burnt offering. Verse 12, chapter 9 says, he slaughtered the burnt offering. Aaron's sons brought him the blood, and he sprinkled it on all sides of the altar. That was a burnt offering. Sin offerings had blood sprinkled too. So did peace offerings. Leviticus 3:2, he shall lay his hand on the head of his offering and slay it at the doorway of the tent of meeting, and Aaron's sons, the priest, shall sprinkle the blood around on the altar. That's referred to a peace offering. Leviticus 3:13, and he shall lay his hand on its head and slay it before the tent of meeting, and the sons of Aaron shall sprinkle its blood around on the altar. Verse 2 of chapter 3 is referring to the bull that was offered for a sin offering for the high priest. Verse 13 of chapter 3 is referring to the bull that was offered as a sin offering for the whole people. In both instances, the blood was sprinkled around the altar. So that's a common thing. Again, the idea is that all of the altar will be covered by the blood. The blood will atone for any sin, that any Levitical unholiness that would be attached to the altar. Verse 19, in Leviticus 9, we have the typical fat that's offered up on the altar in smoke. That's God's portion of the peace offering. Nothing complicated about that. The pieces of the fat are the same as in all the offerings, the entrail fat, the liver fat, the kidney fat, and if it's a sheep, the fat tail. Now, verse 20 has a little problem here. They now, talking about the priest, Aaron's sons, the ordinary priest, they now place the portions of fat on the breast. Now, the breast was reserved for the priest to eat for them or their families. But verse 20 in the New American Standard Version says this: he placed the fat on the breast. He placed the portions of fat on the breast, and he offered them up in smoke on the altar. And it sounds like the breasts were offered up in smoke. Well, we know that in peace offerings, the breasts are not offered up in smoke. They are presented to the priest. Well, the way you answer that is you take the them. This is New American Standard Bible Translation. They now placed the portions of fat on the breast, and he offered the portions of fat up in smoke on the altar, which was typical, not the breasts themselves. John Gill puts it this way: the fat was placed on the breast. The breast and the fat were waved left to right in front of the altar to signify the complete devotion of the offerings to God. The fat that is then taken off the breast, put on the altar and burnt. The breasts which were left over in the priest's hands are then given to the high priest, because the breast belongs to the high priest. We know that because of Leviticus 7, verses 30 through 31, it says this: his own hands will bring the fire offerings to the Lord. He will bring the fat together with the breast. This is the high priest. The breast is to be waved as a presentation offering before the Lord. The priest is to burn the fat on the altar, but the breast belongs to Aaron and his sons. I'm sorry, verse 30, his own hands is the priest's own hands. Doesn't have to be the high priest. The priest is to burn the fat on the altar, but the breast belongs to Aaron and his sons. Breast belongs to all the priests, including the high priest. So there's nothing, once we get past the translation ambiguity there, there's nothing unusual about verse 20. Verse 21, but the breast and the right thigh Aaron presented as a wave offering before the Lord, just as Moses had commanded. Now the right thigh belonged to the officiating priest. Now, since Aaron is the officiating priest here, I suppose he's given the right thigh as well as the breast. He waved it, I guess, because he's the high priest. Normally, the right leg was heaved by the ordinary priest, by the officiating ordinary priest. But here, Aaron is officiating. So I guess that's why he waves it instead of heaving it. All this is done in verse 21, just as Moses had commanded. Over and over again, Moses, who's writing this book, remember, he's saying, I did it just like God told me. I didn't deviate 1 millimeter. Just as God commanded. It was actually commanded in Exodus 29, verse 27. You shall consecrate the breast of the wave offering and the thigh of the heave offering, which was waved and which was offered from the ram of ordination, from the one which was for Aaron and from the one which was for his sons. That's talking about the ordination ceremony, which was carried out in chapter 8, prescribed by God to Moses in Exodus 29, carried out in Leviticus 8. You'll see there's a wave offering, that's the breast, and the heave offering, that's the thigh of a peace offering. Leviticus 9:22 says this: Aaron lifted up his hands toward the people and blessed them. He came down after sacrificing the sin offering, the burnt offering, and the fellowship offering. Now, how did he bless the people? As the NIV Study Bible says, the Aaronic, not ironic, but the Aaronic benediction is a threefold blessing. Numbers 6:23 through 26. Speak to Aaron and to his sons, saying, thus you shall bless the sons of Israel. You shall say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. That's number one. Number two, verse 25. The Lord make his face shine on you. That's number two. And be gracious to you. That's part of number two. Verse 26, the Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace. That's number three. Compare that to the threefold apostolic benediction, which we see in 2 Corinthians 13, verse 14. The grace of the Lord Jesus Christ and the love of God and the fellowship of the Holy Spirit be with you all. That's being blessed by the Trinity. Grace of the Lord Jesus Christ, the second person. The love of God, the first person. And the fellowship of the Holy Spirit, the third person. Be with you all. Now, I don't know if Aaron had gotten word of how to bless the people here at the time of the first sacrifices for the people, whether this came later, I'm not sure, but at any rate, that's interesting that there was a certain way that he was supposed to bless the people. Let me read that again. The Lord bless you and keep you, blessing number one. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you, blessing number two. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace, blessing number three. After the blessing, Aaron came down after sacrificing the sin offering. Came down from where? Came down from the altar, because the altar was high and he was up there handling the offerings. The altar was elevated, but there were no steps going up to it. Exodus 20, verse 26 says, and you shall not go up by steps to my altar, so that your nakedness will not be exposed on it. The ascent was rather by a gentle slope, according to the Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown. I don't know how he knows that, probably from rabbinic materials. And after the offerings were finished, I assume it mentions the sin offering, the burnt offering, the fellowship offering, and I assume that those are the three offerings which were given for the priest, for the people, and for the people and the priest together, all of which we've mentioned in this chapter. Now we'll finish off Leviticus 9 with verses 23 and 24. Moses and Aaron went into the tent of meeting. When they came out and blessed the people, the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. They blessed the people again. Aaron had just blessed them, and Moses blessed them again. This is great. You know, just happened right after the golden calf incident, but they're getting blessed. Another example of grace in the Old Testament. I love it how people say there's no grace in the Old Testament. Oh, yes, there is. Verse 24, then fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offering and the portions of fat on the altar. And when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. First question, verse 23. Why did Moses and Aaron go into the tabernacle, into the tent of meeting? Why? Gill and Clark say it was for this reason. So Moses could show Aaron how to handle the service on the inside. That had all been explained to Moses by God on the mount, and Aaron had not heard it, and so Moses goes in there to tell him how to offer the incense on the golden altar, how to order the showbread on the table, the bread of the presence on the table, how to light and trim the lamps of the seven-branch candlestick. Or it could be they went in there just to pray for the people, but They could have gone to the veil and bowed before that veil behind which was the Ark of the Covenant where God lived and prayed for the people. Could be that. Now the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. Remember, it was earlier said that all this was done in order that the glory of the Lord might appear. Well, here it is. The glory of the Lord appeared. Now, other times when the glory of the Lord shone, when the tabernacle had finished being built, in Exodus 40, verses 34 through 35, we see the Shekinah glory filling the tabernacle. Verse 34, Exodus 40, then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Moses was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud had settled on it, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. So there was glory inside the tabernacle. I assume there's glory on top of the tabernacle. That Shekinah glory was everywhere. God showed up in his Shekinah glory again at the dedication of Solomon's temple, which took the place, of course, of the tabernacle. 2 Chronicles 7:1 says this, now when Solomon had finished praying, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of the Lord filled the house. I'm assuming that's the Shekinah glory. There's some other options as to what that glory was. Could it have been Christ in an epiphany, or the Father, God the Father, in a human form, like in Revelation, on the throne? I don't think so. Gil Clark and Jameson Fossen Brown, all three, suggest that it could be, or at least mention people who suggest it, that the glory of the Lord might be referring to the fire that consumed the sacrifice. Verse 24. The fire came out, and that was the glory. I prefer to say that it was the glory of the Lord appeared with a Shekinah glory, and while they were admiring God, so to speak, all of a sudden, fire comes out from before the Lord. Now, there's disputes among the commentators whether that fire came out of the Holy of Holies through the front door and then blasted the sacrifices that had been laid on the altar, or whether it was lightning that came down out of the sky. I prefer to think it was lightning that came down out of the sky. Consumed the burnt offering and the portions of fat on the altar. Now notice when all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their faces. They've come a long way since the golden calf incident. Now they're being blessed by Aaron, and then by Aaron and Moses, and now God pours out his glory all over the place. His glory appears. Fire lights the sacrifices on the altar, and this is all a token of God's approval. This shows, I'm pleased with what is going on here. You've done a good job. You've sacrificed the way I asked you to. So here's my approval. Now, when that fire lit the fire, it was the first time the fire was kindled, according to BibleHistory.com website. I'm sure that's true. That was the first time the fire was kindled. It was never to go out. Leviticus 6:12 through 13 says this, the fire on the altar is to be kept burning. It must not go out. Every morning the priest will burn wood on the fire. He is to arrange the burnt offering on the fire and burn the fat portions from the fellowship offerings on it. Fire must be kept burning on the altar continually, it must not go out. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Leviticus chapter 9. This prepares us to move on into Leviticus chapter 10, which hopefully will be a little bit easier because it's a story involved. The death of Nadab and Abihu, Aaron's oldest two sons, who were in line to receive the high priesthood, but they screwed it up. I hope you stay tuned for chapter 10, next audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.